Welcome, everyone, to the Our Strange Skies podcast. I am your host, Rob Christofferson. And returning to the pod, he's the host of the Somewhere in the Skies podcast. He's the author of the new book, Stories from Somewhere in the Skies. It's Ryan Sprague. Ryan Sprague, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm good, Rob. Hey, it's the tables have turned, my friend. I had you on not too long ago talking about your new comic and everything. So I'm really excited to be here. It seems like our paths cross constantly. You're in my new book, which I'm sure we'll touch on as well. You've been in both of my books, actually.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, it's an honor to be here, honestly.
Oh, it's always an honor to have you on, dude. Always an honor to have you on and, you know, talking about UFOs and all this crazy stuff. And, you know, you just put out your second book, Stories from Somewhere in the Skies. And these are culled from, you know, your witness account series that you do on the podcast. You've done like 26 volumes of this at this point. You got, I know, 27s, you know, it's in the works. You put out the call. And speaking of, if people want to send in their accounts to you, where should they send those to?
Oh, thanks for asking. Yeah. I mean, I'm always working on witness accounts because they constantly come in, which is amazing. Like you said, when I first started the series, I was like, oh, maybe I'll get a couple stories. It'll make a good episode for the week. And now it's a series within the podcast. And it's exciting, man, that people will share their stories. And on it, that was the culmination of the book as well. But to answer your actual question, what was your original question? I forgot already.
Where can they send their accounts to?
Oh, my gosh. Forgive me, I'm going on an hour of sleep. They can honestly just reach out to me on Twitter at Somewhere Skies, DM me, or right at my website. There's a contact tab, somewhereintheskies.com. And that's when I can give where I can give them more information on how to submit, what I'm kind of looking for in each story. And I would tell people go back and listen to the 26 volumes, get an idea of kind of how people decide to tell their stories and then make it your own. That's what we want. We want to hear it from your voice. We don't want to know what I think about it or, you know, what some other UFO researcher thinks happened to you. We want to hear what you think happened to you. So yeah, witness accounts is going strong. Like you said, ball's always in the air. I've got another one coming out in the next couple of weeks and it's a doozy. Some of the strangest stories I've gotten yet. And that is because people felt empowered after reading the book to come forward. So yeah, it's a wonderful little baby we birthed over at Somewhere in the Skies with witness accounts.
Absolutely. So in the introduction to the book, you talk about how there is this gap in ufology right now between the perception of UFOs, which is heavily, you know, veered towards the military and the like everything else, which doesn't have a military. These are civilian people. And you talked about bridging that gap. Why do you think it's important to bridge that gap? Why did you set out to do that as a goal for this book?
Two reasons. The first being, ever since 2017, hundreds and hundreds of people who have gotten involved in this topic, whether it's online or you know, just in their own lives, people are now interested more than ever in UFOs. They've seemingly gone mainstream. And you and I, we knew the world before 2017 when it came to this topic, completely different. So I think now where we're living in an age where military UFO encounters are at the forefront, no matter where you turn, every news outlet, you know, we just had this Senate UAP hearing recently. We have the new office established in the Department of Defense, Arrow. Everything is focused on that. and these quote unquote trained observers who are experiencing something in our skies that shouldn't be there, and looking at it from a national security standpoint. And look, there's a time and a place for that. That's always going to be a part of UFOs, is the military aspect to all of this. However, you and I know, after speaking with hundreds of individuals, that it's everyday people who are really having these experiences. I mean, statistically, you look at it, and there's only so many military people having incidents over military installations. There's probably 20 to 30 cases for every one of those outside of the military. So that's what I wanted to focus on: the everyday people having the experiences, the ones not being covered by mainstream media every single day ad nauseum. And yeah, that's what we focus on at Somewhere in the Skies. And that's what the book is. I have a section in the book of military encounters. And the reason I included that is kind of the second reason that I said that in the intro, that there's this big gap. Military people are also human. Mm-hmm. They have beliefs like you and I. They have their own beliefs on what they saw. Even if the military says differently about what they saw. So I wanted to focus on that too, show that even people who have been in service and have had these experiences are just the same as you and I, wrestling, struggling with what they saw and trying to understand it and not knowing where to go. And thankfully, there are shows like yours and mine and other UFO podcasts out there where they do have a place to go to talk about these things without the stigma being attached to it any longer. So yeah, those are kind of the reasons I wanted to at least acknowledge that gap and do something about it.
Yeah, and it's very important because this public perception of UFOs is it's always so fascinating to me, because again, it just feels like a lot of people are putting UFO sightings into a certain club that you have to be in order to appreciate them, or to like have the space to even share them half the time. Mm-hmm. Because again, like after 2017, and I've started calling it the Great Reset, because that's what it is for this topic. Yeah. Is like, it's a clean slate. UFOs do not exist past 2004. Like, this is the world we're in, and it's all military. So it just makes a lot of sense to give, you know, a voice to people who have never had it before, and who can put their sightings in a place where they can be, you know, where they're not judged and where they have a space of their own. So in terms of the stories, what was the process like culling through all of these witness accounts and choosing the ones that ended up in the book? Because like, we're talking about right now, it's got to be like, what, over 20 hours of audio?
Yeah,
just alone on the podcast. So what was that process like? And how did you ultimately, you know, come to choose the stories that ultimately made it into the book?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think you said maybe 26 volumes, 27 volumes we're up to. I'd say maybe about 6 months ago now, I decided to do what one of my wrestling podcasts I listen to does. They'll take, you know, if they have talked about whatever Vince McMahon in like 10 of their episodes, they'll take those 10 episodes throughout the run of their show and kind of mash them together and make what they call a megasode. Yeah. And I loved that idea. So I was like, huh, I could do that with the Witness Account series and put that out there for people who may have not heard the series throughout the run of Somewhere in the Skies. So then they can just listen to it straight through. So I did 3 megasodes of like five volumes each, and people loved it. They're like, I could like throw it on and just listen to it, you know, 1 hour here, 1 hour there, and have them all in one place. So that was really kind of the inception of the idea for the book. I was like, okay, Somewhere in the Sky started as a book. I continued it in podcast form, and now it's full circle. I've gone from making what inspired me to make the podcast, and now what inspired me to make the Witness Accounts series into a book, and that's the Witness Accounts. So it was very daunting, to say the least. I made those megasodes so that I personally also had a comprehensive way of going through these things. And I did sit there for almost 20 hours on and off, maybe a couple pee breaks, and really, really try to decide which stories resonated with me personally. You know, how I felt when I saw what I saw, how you expressed how you felt when you saw what you saw, and kind of picking my greatest hits, I guess. Not to say that any story is more important than the other, but these were the ones that really stuck out to me as unique, and really had a, I guess, a beginning, middle, and end. But you and I both know there's never an end to these things. No. There's no conclusion, or it's not easily wrapped up. But yeah, these were really the stories that stuck out to me personally. Someone else might think differently and been like, oh, why didn't she include this one? Or, you know, that one was too similar to that one. But yeah, what you see in this book is kind of what I personally, on my journey to try to find answers, I found most compelling. And I personally learned a little something from each of these.
So let's get into some of these stories here, because there are a lot of like absolutely just like interesting ones. And I think what's great about what you've done with this book is you've chosen a diverse array of things. So it's not like there are stories that don't necessarily totally feel like UFO stories. There's one in here that feels like kind of like a ghost story in a way, in the way that it plays out, like Ronnie LeBlanc's story in this book, in which, you know, he sees these like orbs of light. And before this, his significant other felt like she was being touched on the leg. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and I think that's, you know, one of the great things about this book, this diverse array. So I'm curious, what are some stories that that are some of your favorites, or that that really stuck with you while you were putting this together?
Yeah, sure. So the first one that really sticks out to me, and this came to me, I want to say, even before the Witness Accounts series was created, I already had people reaching out to me and being like, hey, I've got a UFO story. I heard your show. I don't know if you ever like want stories to read on air, but here's one. And that was one of these where I literally read this on the air as kind of like a preamble to an episode. And I didn't realize until I was reading it on air how truly weird it was. And this was a story, the book I titled The Bubbling Black Blob of Fife. And right off the bat, you know, you're not dealing with just a nuts and bolts silver flying disc in the air. So talk about unique. This happened in Fife, Scotland. And this happened in 1996 to a gentleman named Tommy. And he was riding his bike home with a friend, and they saw this like this oil slick in the middle of the road, you know, when gas builds up in like a pothole, or it's really hot out and you can see kind of the waves coming off whatever's in the road, that sort of thing. And they wanted to ride around it, you know, on their bikes. And as they get closer to this thing, they realize that it's actually growing in the road. It's getting wider. It's getting longer. They're like, whoa, like is this like an oil leak in the middle of the road? What the hell is going on? So the closer and closer they get, they start to realize that this oil slick is bubbling. It's like boiling, and they're something's off. Like, so this is not right. And they're watching this bubbling black oil slick, or a blob, as Tommy would eventually end up calling it. They watch as this blob begins to levitate off of the road and slowly ascend into the sky. It's like eye level at this point where they're watching this. Him and his friend like drop their bikes. They're staring at this black blob in the air, and they could smell this horrific odor coming off of whatever this thing was. They could almost see and feel electricity coming off it. And it was morphing almost as if it was like an organic thing or intelligent almost. And they just watched this blob just continue ascending into the air, still bubbling, still boiling, shoot up into the air. There's like a flash of light, horribly loud, unbearable noise occurs. And then the thing is gone. It just disappears. So I don't know, man. I when he brought this story to me again, this is within one of the first couple episodes of Somewhere in the Skies. I'm like, ooh, I'm really going out on a limb talking about this one. This might turn people off immediately. Where now I look at it as one of the pinnacle stories that's ever come to the show because of how unbelievably unique it was. And it was a quote unquote UFO. It was in the air. It was unidentified. And they never knew what the hell that thing was. The bubbling black blob of Fife.
Yeah. Like, how do you categorize something like that?
It's yeah. Just how like... does Project Blue Book tick that box off?
Yeah, exactly. How are you gonna take care of that, Heineck? How about you, Kipania? Huh? What's going on? But like, again, that gets into the diversity of the stories that you put into this book. Like, I don't know how to categorize that. I don't know how to quantify that. It's just there's some stuff that was on the road and it lifted up and it formed into something and it flew off and it smelled terrible.
Like, absolutely putrid, he said. I should mention too, Rob, I forgot about this aspect. Apparently they had missing time too after this setting. I mean, they were on their way to see a friend. This happens. They decide to go home instead. And they get a call from the friend's like mom, calling the other mom at home. And she's like, hey, where Tommy and you know, the friend, they never showed up. And they were like, oh, well, we were on our way, but then this happened. But yeah, we'll go meet up with him. And the mom on the other line was like, well, he's been waiting like 4 hours for you guys.
Oh, God.
Where they said that this event only occurred for a few minutes. So, I mean, again, that just amplifies the high strangeness of this entire thing. They don't think they were abducted, at least not to Tommy's knowledge, but, there was definitely some sort of missing time with the bubbling black blob, if you ask me.
Yeah. And like, I think there's elements of missing time that just like automatically get linked to UFO accounts and abduction accounts. But like, there are plenty of stories of people losing time and like being teleported, transported someplace else. So like there are other aspects to the missing time thing. And I mean, and I remember, you know, there are a few other people that I've heard missing time stories from, and they're just like, I don't think I was abducted, but it's just like there's this gap of time that I just do not know how to make sense of. And yeah, it's like this story is just weird all around. Like this is I always like when stories like this leave me speechless. And there's plenty of stories in this book that actually do. But
what sticks out to you? Can I ask? Can I flip the script on you? Which one kind of left you speechless? I'm curious.
It's the story called The Fire Figure in the Outback.
Oh.
So like, you know, this is, you know, you got soldiers, I think they're in Northern Australia, and you know, I can't even imagine living in some place that's just hot all the time and like there's two seasons, wet and dry. And you know, there's these guys, they're out on patrol and they see these objects in the sky. They're like orange colored lights and they watch them for quite a while. They're about to radio in to their commander, and you know, a bunch of them depart, and then there's just one left just hanging there. So they, and I think what's amazing about this story is like, they just sit there and watch it for like a long time. Like this thing hangs around for hours. They're like laying, I think they describe laying on like the tarmac or something and just like looking up at this thing. And eventually one of the guys sees this like glow coming from the brush nearby, and he assumes, hey, it's a fire. he walks over to it and it's like a glowing set of pants, like a glowing set of legs. They're just like there.
Yeah. Yep.
Like I can't see anything else because it's kind of like backlit. But I'm like, it kind of reminded me a little of the Draguignan sighting from 1973. And this is a Year of the Humanoids case in which this one guy and his girlfriend were on their motorcycle. And they were in the vicinity of the mountain and they end up like getting paced by this UFO. So they eventually, you know, beat feet back into town. They tell a friend, and this friend gathers a bunch of friends. They go up to this mountain and they're like, well, we're going to stake this out. We're going to see this UFO. So they're there for a little bit. They don't see a UFO, but they see this figure coming down the mountain. And there's like a light that eventually materializes into this figure. And it's a tall figure, like 7 feet tall, kind of like a featureless type of figure. But everybody decides, no, we're going to beat feet. We're going to get the hell out of here. So they decide to go down the mountain. There's one group that gets a little bit further than the other because at a certain point, this one figure turns into three and they kind of pursue this guy, this one car down the mountain. And one driver has the idea that they're going to back up and they're going to back up to these creatures. They're going to get out of the vehicle and they ask the creatures, are you good or are you bad?
Like naturally.
The funny thing is like they all conferred with each other for a moment and then it looked like they were just going to go get them. So they just got the hell out of there. But the other group that's further down the hill, they see what they describe as a red luminous legs just run out in front of them.
Oh, wow. There so you like go.
That was the first thing I thought of. I was like, oh, man, we got some luminous pants. Like we got some Fresno Nightcrawlers here.
I was just going to say our clown pants is making a comeback. Clown as pants, well.
Man. Yeah.
Ew. Well, and that was one of the military stories in my book, which you wouldn't expect. You would have thought, you know, this section of the book would be like the most methodical kind of straight laced UFO encounters out there. Mm-hmm. When in reality, some of those military stories in the book are the strangest ones. I mean, there was one right before that where a guy had a shadow figure incident happen in a nuclear installation in the most top secret corridor of the base. Again, we're not just talking lights in the sky with this book. We've got a lot of different things. And that one, the fire figure in the outback, definitely one of the stranger ones I've heard of, like almost disembodied legs just in a self-illuminated ball of fire. And they even called the fire department to come out because they, like you mentioned, they thought it was a brush fire. And when the fire department shows up, the fireball with the pants in it or the legs just flips off like a switch and it's gone. And when they run up to where it was, there's nothing but a pile of like ash and sand, but nothing around it. The vegetation, the bushes, the ground, nothing was burnt whatsoever. So what the hell? What do you make of that? So they go to report this event and their commander says, nope, didn't happen. So you've got that whole cliche as well. He said, maybe you saw what was in the sky, but that was it. You're making everything else up. Don't put it in the report. We're not going to talk about this. So that was a tough one. That was by a woman, actually, at least someone who identified as female. Daylin brought this story to me and she said, I've never spoken about this before. I'm probably never going to speak about it again. But here's my story for you. And that means a lot to me, man. Like, I do not take that lightly. And you know that when people trust you with these stories, I want to give it the respect and the space it truly deserves. So I hope I've done these 50 people and stories justice. And that was definitely by far one of the ones that really stood out to me as unique.
Yeah. And like, it's the kind of, it's, it's one of those kind of cases that, like, yeah, I can only laugh because, like, I don't think I can, like, think of anything else. One other story that I just, like, absolutely loved is the Skies of Monsterland. And
yeah,
and the 8 foot tall mantis man.
Yep. Yeah, you got a straight up mantis man encounter in the middle of New Jersey. New Jersey's a weird place, dude. Like, not mm-hmm. just with UFOs and aliens, just in general, having lived adjacent to it for half my life. It's just a weird place. And you've got the story of the mantis man that was told by a gentleman named Patrick who encountered this near a river there. I had another story in the book of an alien, just an alien gray, mm-hmm. Walking down the sidewalk of New Jersey yep. in the suburbs, just as if it had come from the grocery store and was on its way home. Someone encountered an alien gray just walking down the sidewalk after having seen a UFO in the sky. So I don't know what's going on over there in New Jersey, but we got grays, we've got mantoids, we've got everything going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just, like, a lot going on. Yeah. New Jersey definitely has its own bit of weirdness. So, you know, in the first book, you talked about your own experience at the place formerly known as the Doctor's Inn. It's not the Doctor's Inn anymore. but I'm curious, when the story of, as you put it, the tapping on the window came to you, how did it make you feel when that story came into your lap? I'm just curious.
It gave me goosebumps because I put myself right back in those memory shoes of being at the Doctor's Inn in central New York, and mentally, probably physically too, but mostly mentally and emotionally preparing myself to possibly have a close encounter or be abducted. And look, I put myself in that situation. I spent a weekend in the middle of the woods. You know the area well, with a group of alien, quote unquote, abductees to see if anything would happen. And it was a terrifying night, no matter what it was or wasn't. I really thought my reality was going to change that night. And it did in some ways. But I did get a story of a woman who had an experience where something kept tapping on her window, and I could hear it. I could hear it in my head when she was telling it, and it brought me back to that moment. So again, those are the types of stories that really resonated with me. I had to put that one in the book for obvious reasons. But from what I recall, that was a story where a young girl was visited by something. A being of some sort, and it wanted her to come with her onto a craft, and it was very insistent on her coming with her. And she found it very scary, traumatizing. She did not go with the being, thank God. But yeah, again, it's just one of those stories that has these small elements that, until you hear it from the individual telling it, it's not as impactful. So I had to call it tapping on the window as a kind of a call back to what had happened to me in chapter 13. You hear that, Mike Clellan? Chapter 13, 1-3. Make a pattern of that, buddy. It brought me right back to those days. So shout out to Mike Clellan. I love that man to death.
He's such a great dude. And yeah, we had him on and talked his ear off, like, and like the conversation surprisingly kept coming back to Cernak Lake. Like, we would You know, we started off talking about Saranac Lake, and like we would veer away, and he's like, "Oh, this reminds me of something in Saranac Lake," and I'm like, "Oh man, here we go,
here we go." There's something about the area, man. I mean, and you look at your own sighting, which I've had you tell now in both versions of my books, of the Adirondack Egg. I called it this time. Mm-hmm. I hope that title was okay. I really tried make the titles fun. And your story. Again, we can trace these things back and find like patterns with even historic cases out there. And yours has always reminded me of the Socorro incident, the, mm-hmm. the craft itself. And I love that. Someone asked me on an interview the other day about your story, and they made that comparison without me even bringing it up. So right then and there, I'm like, wow. There's something to this. People are seeing similar things in the sky. And while we can draw patterns sometimes, it really is that individual experience that shapes and molds how they eventually interpret it.
So
I find that very fascinating as well.
Yeah. And for anybody that wants to go back, because, you know, you edited these stories down, you know, to size and everything, and to, you know, make them, put them in a framework. If anybody goes back and listens to, it's volume 3. I believe I'm the first story featured in volume 3. I talk about that. I talk about how, because Lonnie Zamora was my in to this topic, into this phenomenon, that it seemed kind of fitting that my introduction to it is this giant egg. So like, you know, those parallels, like it makes you think, well, it does this, whatever this stuff is, whatever this phenomenon is, does it see what's in your head and decide this is the form that I choose? Is this the Gozer? Are the UFOs really Gozer? Gozerian?
Interesting. Know. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it really makes you wonder, and that was something that I've always wondered about, and like it's interesting to see other people making that kind of comparison, because it mm-hmm. is, it's one that I made, you know, quite a few times when thinking about it, and that was a conversation that I had with Mike too, because we did bring up that sighting and how. We're doing this podcast because of that sighting, basically. Like, this podcast wouldn't exist without it. So I'm curious, man, what are some of your other favorite stories from the book?
Let's see. I kind of mentioned the alien on the sidewalk, which was a cool one. Mm-hmm. This one sticks out to me because it's not what you would expect in the middle of New York City, of all places. Now, Saranac Lake, up in the Adirondacks, areas in upstate and central New York are very well known for their UFO cases, but you don't hear a lot in the more metropolitan areas of literally right. New York City. I mean, I barely ever had any UFO reports come to me because of, you know, light pollution and just simply being by two huge airports. Everything can usually be explained with an airplane. But I titled a chapter in the book, The Bronx Invasion, because I had a guy reach out to me, Miguel, who had two separate UFO sightings in the middle of Manhattan. So I had to include these to kind of give a shout out to my home for the past 12 something years. And the first one happened to him in 1989. And this happened at over the Whitestone Bridge, which is over the Hudson River in New York. And he saw, he was a kid at the time, he saw a classic just flying saucer hovering right above the river. And not only that, shortly after seeing the saucer, he saw a fighter jet head towards the thing. Again, like, we are not used to seeing fighter jets over Manhattan. If that's the case, something is very, very wrong. And the fact that this kid saw a jet pursue what he claims was a flying saucer. And then the jet disappeared with the UFO over Queens somewhere. It's troubling, to say the least. So that was interesting. But then, you know, many, many years later in 2002, he had another sighting in the Bronx. And this actually took place when he was working security at a beer distribution company. And he saw a massive black triangle that floated right past the building, lit up the entire area. And this one reminded me, do you ever see the episode of The X-Files where Mulder's like in an abandoned factory and the triangular UFO is outside? Yep. Oh my God, dude. Like, that reminded me so much of this. I was just envisioning like this guy in his beer distribution building and a UFO floating outside the window and kind of just scoping him out inside. And then the thing floating by and disappearing. So, it gave me chills. And again, the reason I decided to include those is while they, you know, a flying saucer, black triangle, we hear about these all the time. You don't hear about them in the middle of freaking New York City. No. So I found that terribly unique as well.
Yeah. And what's interesting here is I just did just released an episode with Mothboy Matt from the Mothboys. And we talked about New York. We talked about New York stories. And one of the stories that I told is about the supposed UFO crash that happened in 1989 in Mauritius Bay off Long Island. And what we I ended up finding, because this was a case that was covered by Leonard Stringfield in one of his status report updates. I think it's like status report update 6. And what he had found was that at that time in 1989, despite the fact that the Hudson Valley, you know, UFO wave was pretty much done with by like 86, 87, somewhere around there, a lot of people reported large objects. Some were like boomerang shaped, some were giant triangles, others flying saucers. So it's so interesting that he had that. And like, we've basically, you know, there is a series of other sightings that took place. A lot of them were documented in September of that year. And even earlier than that, there are some other sightings. But basically, there were a lot of people near Mauritius Bay that ended up seeing this object just like hovering over the area. And they also had like military helicopters in the area around this thing for hours. It hung around from like 8:30 to about midnight is what these people saying. Yeah. And this was a case investigated by LIUFON, the Long Island UFO Network. So there's an interesting parallel, man. We're making connections here.
We are. And, you know, that's great. I can't wait to hear that episode, because I know you and I did a New York episode on Somewhere in the Skies too, yep, where, if I recall, we covered that crazy case of like an ice cream cone UFO over a nuclear plant, if I'm remembering correctly. Crazy, man. New York doesn't get the credit it deserves when it comes to this stuff. Everyone just always thinks of like the Hudson Valley wave, and that's kind of it. Or like the Brooklyn Bridge abduction story. Take that for what you will. But there's such a rich history of UFOs in New York. And I've got yours. I've got this one in New York City. I believe there's one or two other stories out of New York in the book as well. I'd have to really go back and look, but yeah, it's fascinating. And I love hearing that LIUFON was the ones to look into it. That's an interesting name for a UFO group. I love it.
Yeah. It's so great. So, man, I need you to tell the Michael McMillan story, because it's just so good. It's so it's so good. It's so weird. And like, it's so unexpected for like an alien encounter type story.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. So for any of your listeners who don't know, Michael McMillan's an actor in Los Angeles. I knew him best from True Blood. He played one of my favorite characters back in the day on True Blood for one of their seasons. And he also was in Silicon Valley, which is another show I love too. And when I was living in Los Angeles for a small stint there, Michael reached out to me. He listened to my show. He listened to your show. And he was like, "Hey, you're in LA now. We got to do an episode. Like, let's do this." And I was like, "Oh my God, I've seen you on TV." I was like so nervous. But he had been doing this podcast with his buddy, Bryce Johnson, another actor, for a few years, called the Bigfoot Collectors Club. And it kind of started as a Bigfoot show. And as these things often do, morph into all different types of high strangeness and UFOs. And I had the awesome opportunity to come on live and do a show with them when I was living there. And we just hit it off. We became really good friends and colleagues after that. And Michael had on occasion said, "I have a crazy story for you. I'm not quite ready to talk about it yet, but I will. I will." And I remember distinctly one night, he finally broke down. He's like, "Okay, I'm going to tell you the story about the alien in my window." And I was like, "What? What? You've been holding back on me with that, dude? I thought you were going to tell me like you saw some lights in the sky or something, not a close encounter of the third kind." So yeah, he told this story on the podcast and I had to put it in the book. I called it The Night Visitor of Hollywood. And this happened in June of 2016. Oddly enough, this happened right after a trip that Michael had made to Roswell, New Mexico, to go to the supposed crash site, the UFO museum. So he lived in a ground floor apartment building in Hollywood. And one night he was woken up by his dogs barking in the home. So he said, "Oh God, like what's going on? What is there an intruder? I got to go check on this." So he gets up, he goes out to the living room, and in the window, he sees all he could describe as, let me actually pull this up here because I want to get it right. I could see the silhouette of a figure. What was curious about it, though, was instead of it being the silhouette of a human, the shadow I saw had a long, skinny neck, a rounded head, and a pointy chin. I couldn't see any details because the curtains were drawn, but my dogs were going apeshit barking at this thing. And all I said to myself was, "Well, that looks like an alien." And you, if you listen to the podcast, you can hear Michael saying that out loud. And then he goes on to just say it was a classic gray alien silhouette, something that looks straight out of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And as I was looking at it and thinking this, the figure turned its head to its left, and I could see that the head and the neck sort of undulate. I could see where the neck was fused at the back of the head, and it almost looked like a golf wedge, which, yeah, that makes sense when you think about the kind of profile of an alien gray. And he at first was like, "Oh, maybe it was my neighbor or something," but his neighbor was at home at the time that this happened. Could have been someone scoping out the area, but he didn't think so. And he eventually, his neighbor does come home and he like straight up asks him, like, "Did you like see anything out there?" And his neighbor was like, "No, but funny enough, like the motion sensor lights kept going off outside. So there was definitely something there." So yeah, I mean, take this for what you will. Michael doesn't claim that he literally stared into the deep black orbital eyes of a gray alien or anything, but he believes that he possibly saw an alien gray scoping out his apartment there right in the middle of Hollywood. So again, not these areas where you would expect these events to take place, but they do happen, and they happen to True Blood actors and Silicon Valley actors and the hosts of Bigfoot podcasts. So yeah, I was really honored that Michael decided to share that story on the show, for sure.
And I think my favorite part in it is that he says, I think the alien might have been interested in my dog snoring.
There you go, man. Like, that is very possible. Who right. knows what they're interested in? I know you've covered some of the weirdest stories of alien greys. And one of my favorite episodes you ever did was Sometimes Aliens F Up. And, you know, we don't know why they do the things they do or their motivations or why they make mistakes. And maybe this was one of those moments where it was getting ready for an abduction, but it heard the dog snoring and it got distracted and curious by that. And the rest is history. I honestly couldn't tell you, but that's the night visitor of Hollywood.
So I think there's a valuable lesson here in that if we want to thwart alien abductions, we need sounds of animals snoring and we need to have them playing in the background. It's just a complete and total distraction for them. We've got it. This is our moment where, you know, we're not uploading the virus into like the alien mainframe, but this is the next best thing we have. Dogs snoring.
Absolutely. Definitely not as hard as uploading a virus to an alien craft. We just throw dog snoring into YouTube and you're set for the next 12 hours.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's the new white noise. Like, you're going to go to sleep to it every night and you're going to live a carefree life knowing, like, this is the update to Ann Druffel's How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction. Like,
yep.
It's we've needed it for a long time now. And, you know, I think little by little, we're going to piece it together. We're going to get this down pat because, you know, we've got to stop this at all costs. Like, it's getting, I mean, it doesn't have the spotlight that it used to, but they've got to still be happening out there, you know? So
yeah, absolutely, man.
Defensive tool. Like, this is our shark repellent. We've got it now.
Oh, Batman. I miss that. I miss the 60s version. Was it 70s?
Yes. 60s. Yeah.
60s. Okay. God bless you, Adam West. Hey, man. Like, and like, we laughed a lot at some of these stories because of how weird they are. But I do want to note, too, like, some of these events are deeply traumatic for people and scary. So I highlight those as well. We talked about some of the weirder ones that you can kind of, you know, smirk at. And I'm sure these people did as well. I mean, Michael had, you know, there's a lot of humility in him telling that story. And same with the bubbling black blob of Fife. But I don't want people to think laughing at these things takes away from them whatsoever. No. That's just our uneasiness of trying to also accept that these things are actually happening to people. And I firmly believe that. That was another big reason I picked these stories is these are the weirder they are, the more I'm apt to believe these things actually happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And you know, the one thing that we touched upon a lot is the idea that it's the absurdity of a lot of these cases that lend credence to them. And the fact that they don't follow a set of human logic to their ultimate end, which is always abrupt. It's never, you know, in a nice and like even story by the time that you get to the end of it. And I think that's something that's very important to emphasize over and over again is like the idea that when we laugh, we're one of the reasons that we laugh is because these aliens, just like when you read about alien encounters, it's like these aliens seem like bumbling idiots like half the time. So they're worthy of laughing at, you know.
Yes. Bumbling idiots or just like lacking all emotion and empathy for what they're actually doing to people. And more times than not, bumbling idiots for sure.
Like,
they travel all this way and make the like most easiest mistakes, if you ask me.
Yeah, they travel all this way. They haven't done their homework. They don't know how bed sheets work. They don't know how simple things work.
Put you back in the wrong car.
Yeah, put you back in the wrong car. Your clothes are on backwards. What are clothes? How do they work? This is like, you know, if if with ICP it's magnets, with aliens it's clothes. How do they work? Like, they're literally trying to figure it out. They don't know yet. And I can see that struggle on their face every single time, because, like, sure, when you see like images of grays over and over again, there's like, there's no image that you can read off that face, but deep down, you know, it's clothes. They don't understand it.
Yep. That is the mystery of the universe. Clothes.
Yeah. Close. Like, they're like, why do you think they wear one piece outfits? Because it's too complicated for them to figure it out. So
point, man. They haven't graduated past onesies yet.
No. So they're just like slightly larger toddlers. That's it. You know, slightly larger toddlers with that look terrifying. One thing that I'm absolutely curious about, and I think it's an apt question to ask here, you know, one thing that I tout you for, and I tout even Mike Cleland, is the questions that you generally ask are the questions that most investigators don't ask, which is, you know, how did this affect you? You know, what were you doing before this? And how did this change your life? And, you know, you've asked all of these witnesses to give their insights on what they think these encounters mean for them. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, and not only that, but how they changed them. So I'm curious, how have these stories changed you since you started doing this series? Like, you started doing the witness account series back in what, 2017?
Yeah.
So in all of these years later, how has this series changed you, changed your outlook, changed your view on this topic?
It has made me such a more empathetic person. And, you know, I've always been kind of sensitive, wear my heart on my sleeve, sort of person to begin with. And I think that's one of the strengths that I have in this field above other researchers who are very, and I don't fault them for this, are very to the point, just want data, just want evidence, don't care really about the witness. And that's fine. Like, there's a place for everyone in investigating these things. But at the same time, I'm also not like a hypnotherapist. I'm not trying to unravel this puzzle to tell you what happened to you. I'm just here to listen. And I've tried to keep that in mind as I continue the show. Is I'm not here to judge. I'm not here to explain these things. I'm just here if you want to tell your story, to get it out there, to preserve it. Where it goes from there is up to you. If you want to, you know, if you want to try to find answers, reach out to me and I'll try to put you in touch with someone else who had a similar experience that came into the show. I've had that happen where listeners from different volumes of the show emailed me and they're like, hey, I just listened to volume 24 and they saw a rhombus shaped object in the sky that I think I saw. Is there any way I could talk to them? And then I very carefully put them in touch responsibly and let them take it from there. So I think what I've learned is that I'm here to give people a voice. If people are going to continue listening to Somewhere in the Skies or reading my books or giving a crap about what I have to say about UFOs, which still stuns and surprises me, I want to take that very seriously. And I want to be responsible with that. And I want to give these people a place to tell their story when nobody else will listen. And I think that's kind of what I've learned, that I'm not out to find answers to the UFO mystery. And I don't think I ever truly was. Maybe when I first started, I thought that was possible, but I think that's a mistake every single UFO researcher makes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I go back to Hynek. I go back to Stanton Friedman, these men who dedicated half their lives to this topic and were no closer to an answer than when they left. I hope they're getting those answers now. And maybe we will someday as well. But right now, man, I'm continuing to live in this journey and live through these stories of other people, and not so much find connections between the triangle I saw and the triangle someone else saw, but what it did to us and in the path it sent us on. Again, I never planned on being a UFO researcher, doing what I do, or talking to you right now, even. That was never what I expected, but here I am, and I love it. And I love kind of the community that's built up around this witness account series. And if I can continue to be that person that you want to tell your story to, awesome. I would love to do that. So yeah, it's been a huge learning process for me. I feel like I've grown immensely through this series. It's opened my mind in many different ways. It's made me embrace the weirder aspects of the UFO topic. And go back to the heart of why I truly started the show. And that was to hear people's stories. And yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now in my personal journey. And I have to thank every single person in the book and every person who's ever submitted their story to the show for that. I would not be who I am today without them.
When you had me on your show last time with our buddy Todd Purse, we talked about Welcome UFO People, the webcomic. One of the things that I remember you saying is that you called yourself a fence sitter, and you said that you were, you know, sitting on that fence and you weren't going to get off it. And I think that's a gross mischaracterization. I think what you are and what I appreciated about you is that you're an open book. And not only are you an open book, but you're an open book that allows people to tell their stories. You're an open book that allows people to just come up and write their story in it. And that's one of the beautiful things about what you do. And one of the things that I appreciate about you is lending space to the people who want to get their stories out there and who maybe want to find a connection through sharing their stories. And that's one thing that your podcast has been doing proudly for years, and it's a lot to be proud of, man. And I'm proud of you for putting out this book. So dude,
thank you
so much for coming on the pod and talking about this, and you know, for being you and for doing the podcast and giving these people a voice. So you know, thank you first and foremost. Dude. But you know, yeah.
Well, let me just say thank you. Mm-hmm. This book is not by me. I mean, it's that mm-hmm. simple. I wrote like a 5-page introduction. There's a foreword, and I wrote like an introduction to each section. But like, this was a book by you and the mm-hmm. 49 other people who came forward. So thank you. Thank you for allowing me to share your story twice now. Thank you to anyone listening who's ever reached out to me. So no, it's an honor. You continue to inspire me every day. You keep me going. There's other shows out there as well that really inspire me. Many of them are in the book. I do have a lot of podcasters in the UFO space that submitted their stories. And without you guys, I don't know if I would continue on this journey. We all have personal lives as well. And that's sometimes and should take precedent over the UFO topic, but this is the one thing that brings us together, and it's a mystery we all continue to pursue. So I'm just thankful to have good friends and colleagues who I could literally trust with my life and in this topic. And you're one of those people. So sorry, that was my long-winded way of saying thank you for having me.
No, thank you, dude. No, thank you. Like it's always a good to chat with you about all this stuff, man, all the UFO stuff. So if people want to get their hands on the book, where can they get their hands on this book right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now it's available at Barnes & Noble, I've been told. And obviously on the soul sucking corporate megalith that is Amazon. I hate to say it, but look, that's where it's available. In paperback and ebook. And we do have an audiobook planned. I just talked to the publishers today to get that set into motion. I'm not sure quite how the audiobook's going to go, because literally this book is a transcription of a podcast already. Mm-hmm. So I'm in a weird limbo with that. I'm like, well, just go listen to the podcast. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, I like to do audio documentary episodes of the show where I hire, you know, professional actors in New York and stuff. I recently had, in the past year, the girl who played Elsa in the original Frozen Disney movie. She played the teen Elsa. She voiced something in one of my episodes, which is insane. And I never told anyone that. And, and it was just so cool to like, that's like a little thing I'll always have. And now your audience knows, but, maybe I'll go that route and just, hire a bunch of people to do it. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Wow. The book's on Amazon. There we go. I can't just give you like a sentence answer. What is wrong with me?
No, man. That's what I love about you is like, I enjoy the extra bits. Everybody enjoys the extra bits. And of course, folks, if you're not listening to Somewhere in the Skies, you should go listen to Somewhere in the Skies. You can listen to it on damn near every podcast app that you can think of. If you've got a podcast app on your phone, you can pull it up. Go listen to, there's so many episodes that you can go listen to. Please go listen to them. And thank you again for coming on the pod, man. I appreciate
it. Thanks, Rob. Always a pleasure, buddy.
Yeah, always great to have you on. And guys, you know all the stuff. Go to ourstrangeskies.com if you want your links and all that stuff. You know about Welcome UFO People. You know about it all. And finally, don't forget to look up, because you never know what you'll find in our strange skies or somewhere in your skies.
Nice. Gray,
we trust.
Media.